Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for July 30th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is the post-NXT Great American Bash show. So we're going to break this show down into two parts. We're going to talk about Great American Bash, the show that just went off the air on Peacock. And we're also going to look ahead to SummerSlam, next Saturday night's PLE extravaganza being put on by WWE. So those are the two shows that we're going to focus on here tonight. We want to hear from you. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Press 1 to show up in the queue to talk. Otherwise, you can just hang out and listen. I know it's late here on a Sunday night. People have to go to work tomorrow. So if you want to give your thoughts on NXT or SummerSlam, you may do so via email. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you're going to want to go to do that. I want to give a shout-out to Nate Lindberg, who hosted for me in somewhat of an emergency last week. I didn't anticipate not having to host last week until the last minute. So I appreciate him stepping up and hosting for me in my absence. And I also want to thank the person I'm about to welcome on the show, Kevin Catani, who was his co-host last week. So Kevin's going to join me here now to break down Great American Bash and also preview SummerSlam. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Greg, welcome. Thanks for welcoming me. I am so stoked to be on with you. I listen to you every week, and so it's kind of a full circle pro wrestling bucket list item to be on with you tonight. So thanks for the offer.
Yeah, absolutely. I know this is your first time on with me here on Wrestling Night in America. Always excited to hear from new voices, get some new opinions from those who help out and contribute to PWTorch.com, which of course you do. So really excited to talk with you about this and with callers and emailers if we get to them here tonight. So Great American Bash just went off the air. We'll start at the top with the first match, which was Tony D'Angelo and Chandler Stacks Lorenzo defeating Gallus to win the NXT tag title. So this felt like the proper culmination for this long, drawn-out feud that has gotten a lot of TV time. The bloodline, it's not, but I think it was intriguing in its own right in terms of the twists and turns that we saw throughout the family's storyline here. Kind of felt like Gallus was sort of the background player to Tony and Stax and what their relationship was and the twists and turns that their relationship went through during this storyline. I thought the match was decent enough. It wasn't great. I thought Stax was still a little raw, especially compared to some of the others that were in the match. But what did you make of the match and sort of putting a bow, apparently, on this storyline with Gallus?
Yeah, sure. Well, I agree with you. I thought the match was good enough. See, I'm a big Gallus fan. I was a big NXT UK guy, and I don't know if it's a badge of honor or not, but I know I watched every episode of it up until it went off the air. And so I'm a big Gallus guy. But I do agree that I thought this was the ending that needed to happen. But I still don't know that. One of the notes I made is I just don't know if Tony D'Angelo and Stax are compelling enough to have any sort of lengthy run. I question that. Now, I hope they surprise me. I hope that they keep it for a bit and show everybody that the title is going to help elevate their game. But I think, Tony is, I don't want to say one note in terms of his wrestling, but his moveset is not exactly spectacular. And as you pointed out, Stax is still relatively green and sort of picking it up. And so is that who you want to be the face of the tag division right now, all the while knowing that they kind of had to win based on how the storyline went. So we'll see. I'm not down on it, but I do wonder if a fast switch will come, if they're kind of transitional, or if they hold it for a while.
Yeah, I kind of feel like they might hold it for a while just because, look, they devoted a lot of TV time to the Stax and D'Angelo relationship. Obviously, the writers enjoy. I mean, it's pretty easy to tell who the writers enjoy writing for, and I think Tony D'Angelo and his brood is one that they enjoy writing for. So, you know, having the tag titles on them gives them a reason to keep putting them in prominent positions and segments on TV going forward.
But Greg, I would also say, I think if you want to keep that group fresh, I dare say they might want to think about adding at least one more person to it, and maybe a female or maybe just another guy. But I think that there needs to be a new component to help freshen that up a little bit.
Agreed, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that here down the line, sooner rather than later, perhaps even. Match number two was Roxanne Perez defeating Blair Davenport in a Weapons Wild match. I thought they had done a really nice job of building this one and the animosity between these two and the physicality that they were going to bring to the point where, you know, it was an anticipated match that could have easily gone the other way. Although, you know, Roxanne in Texas, she was over with the crowd. She had her sister and her mother at ringside for support and to draw extra sympathy out of. Lots of chairs, tables. They were the main weapons of choice here. They also used a cowbell, which was alluded to by the announcers as somewhat of a tribute to Dusty Rhodes, who, you know, founded the Great American Bash, and there was plenty of talk about Dusty Rhodes throughout this show and the impact that he had historically on the Great American Bash show. I like Blair Davenport. I would like to see more of her. I think she's, you know, I think she had some visa issues that she had to work out, and now she's probably back full time, which I think is a good thing, gives the women's division even more depth. But this is pretty good. Roxanne Perez gets to show off maybe a different side of her in this hardcore type of match, which is only going to help her moving up the ladder, I think, as she is able to put more tools in her toolbox, Kevin.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought it was a really solid match, too. I like Blair as well. And what I liked about this match in general, perhaps in contrast to maybe others like it in WWE, and then, of course, others we've seen across other companies, is I felt every ounce of the brutalism that the weapons matches carry, but they did it without blood. And I think that, to me, that's a really good sign that they can still convey that message and not think that they have to show that reality, you know, that extra reality piece that I think some other matches they use as a, well, no one's going to believe it if we don't bleed. And so that kind of stuck out to me, that they were still able to communicate being, you know, being every ounce as mean as the weapons indicated, but still able to do it, I guess, cleanly. As sort of an aside, one of the things that popped out to me, and I guess I just inherently look for these things, but towards that maybe early middle of the match, when Blair was showboating in front of Roxanne's mom and sister, and very clearly, you know, yelling and trying to just get under their skin, it almost looked like Roxanne's sister was like smiling, like as we know from, you know, behind the scenes, I'm sure they're all friends and they talked about it to her beforehand and said, don't worry, sissy's not really going to get beat up, you know, that sort of thing. But like, she was covering her mouth as if she was trying not to like pull a Jimmy Fallon on SNL.
That was, and I remember that because I thought they were trying to sell like she was crying, but it did kind of look like she was doing it and she was laughing. So, you have that plausible deniability where you can say, oh, no, she's putting her face in her hands because she's crying, even though it kind of looked like she was laughing. I do remember
that. It did. It looked like she was trying to hold back laughter. But again, I love when family is included in matches. It was interesting to me, though, that they were sitting in that sort of corner on the entrance ramp, because usually family sits on the hard cam side, right, and on sort of the flat edge, and so I thought it was an interesting placement of them, but I know that also worked into sort of the double entrance as Roxanne came in and met with mom and sis, and then the guy in the luchador mask, and then got hit by Blair. And then what was the other note I wrote? I thought the finish was fabulous. The pop rocks into the chairs, it just felt mean and awful and hurtful. And so that was a really cool sort of ending, because of course she tried it earlier and didn't hit it. And then just as a quick aside, you mentioned Dusty Rhodes, and I liked the opening with Cody, but my 5 and 3-year-old daughters are the biggest Cody Rhodes fans. Every time we get in the car, they make me play Cody's entrance music on Spotify in the car. And when Roxanne came out, my 5-year-old said, "Daddy, why is she dressed like Cody Rhodes?" And I said, "Okay, fair point. Let me try to explain this to you in a way that you'll understand." And so I think she got it, but she was very, very cued into all the red, white, and blue being Cody's clothes and why were other people wearing them and why was the match looking like a Cody match. So,
yes. Yeah, that, you know, that's something you don't think about for the younger audience that may have questions like that. So it's a good point. The third match was potentially the match that's going to be talked about the most coming out of this show by people who saw it, and that was Gable Steveson making his NXT in-ring debut, going to a double countout with Baron Corbin. Two things about this match. The first is Steveson's actual performance in it, which was limited. He did a lot of selling. There was one point early on where he did sort of a leapfrog over Corbin, who was running into the corner, and it looked like he got too much air on the leapfrog, and it sort of threw off their timing a little bit. That was the one really noticeable spot, and that was early on in the match that looked screwed up. The other thing is the crowd reaction, which was solidly pro Baron Corbin. And that is not something you can say very often. In fact, probably the reason Corbin was paired with Steveson here is because management felt no one's going to cheer Baron Corbin, but this Texas crowd took on that challenge. And by the end, I mean, they were overwhelmingly cheering Corbin. So what do you make of those two big talking points coming out of this match? Steveson's performance sort of in a vacuum here in this match, and then the crowd reaction, did that surprise you that there was so much blowback against Gable Steveson in this match?
Okay, cool. So for as far as the match itself, I agree that Gable was limited in what he did. I think the other reason why they paired him with Corbin was they knew that Corbin could carry the match and sort of create the movement in sort of the more technical ways. I think, and we'll talk about Thea and her body language later, but in a similar way, I think Gable's, what was evident to me in this first actual match, and it sort of seemed like a continuation of when they first introduced him. It was a main roster PLE where they brought him out and he got to get a little physical. I think he's really going to have to figure out the balance of, yes, you're a freak athlete, but like, you've got to figure out how to balance that, because his back suplexes, you know what I mean? Like, he gets really low, like he would if he was in an actual match, but then seems to overthrow the person just because I think he thinks explosion, explosion, explosion is what I need as an amateur wrestler. And so I think as his coaching and as his, work at the performance center continues, you know, they've got to kind of tell him, look, buddy, like, you've got all the athleticism in the world, but like you said, he jumped over him to a point where he jumped too far. And there were other little small instances where getting used to a whatever WWE is, a 19 by 19 or 20 by 20 ring versus, you know, an amateur wrestling circle, the space is different, the timing is different. And so I just think he's got to work on sort of scaling back the explosiveness, if you will. You know, more the acting selling versus the actual legitimate, look how much I can jump and lift and all that.
That's going to be hard to do, too, because he's still training to wrestle amateur. You know, he's kind of splitting his time, by the sounds of it, between the WWE and still training for, you know, whether it's, I'm not sure, I don't remember which exactly it is, or whether it's the upcoming, you know, world championships or whatever like that, but he is still training in the amateur style. So it's hard to fully divorce yourself from first of all, everything you've been trained to do growing up.
Sure.
And think of the hours that he has to put in to be as good as he is at that craft. And now you're basically having to unlearn all of that and relearn a different style while at the same time still training in that style. So it's got to be incredibly difficult for him.
Right. Well, and I remember anytime I've ever seen a documentary on Kurt Angle, you always kind of heard that comment that he, of any of the not brought up in the business wrestlers that have been really good in the WWE and just sort of in any company, he was the one that sort of learned that line the quickest, right? Like, we get what you were, but you're not. Like, that's something that, like, Ronda still struggles with is you're not a professional MMA fighter anymore. You have to look like you're a professional MMA fighter still. And so, and actually, Greg, so I live in Iowa, and Gable currently attends, or at least as the last I read, still is at Minnesota. But there actually is a bit of a bidding war because the University of Iowa, which has a very good college wrestling program, apparently is trying to recruit him for his, like, extra year, if you will, to come wrestle in Iowa. And so his energy has a whole different energy outside of WWE right now in sort of the college wrestling world, because there's a lot of back and forth of, do you want to win an individual national title at Minnesota, or do you want to compete for a team national title at Iowa because you already have your individual? So that's sort of it's got to be in the back of his head as well. And so that's sort of big here in the Midwest. And then as far as the crowd, I have at least four bullet points on just that. You know, the crowd certainly was cheering Corbin and booing. And at the very end, when they gave Gable his, yeah, you lost, well, you drew, but you smashed Corbin into the wall, now get in the ring and soak up the cheers. And I saw people thumbs down booing in the crowd. And the only thing I'll say, and I know that Ryan, I imagine Ryan from Cumberland might call, because he's usually good with this sort of stuff too, but I only recently found out, and I don't mean to muddy waters with it, but apparently he's a year ago, 2 years ago, was implicated in some sort of off-the-mat misconduct while wrestling at Minnesota. And so I don't know if now that he's sort of getting limelight, that story is coming out. And so people are like, well, wait a minute, why are we going down this road again when other wrestlers were sort of cut ties with just based on sort of allegations, that sort of thing. So
yeah.
I don't know if that's part of it too. I don't know that you can rule it out, but I don't know how many people know that that's a thing. But I do know if you
right,
Google his name, it is one of the first couple things that pop up.
It did cross my mind, but I came to the same conclusion as you is, you know, how many people in that crowd really know about that? You know, those sexual assault
right.
allegations from, I think, 2019 it was. And so I remember, this is the same fans who wildly cheer Vince McMahon every time he's on screen. So I don't know if that, you know, I don't know that their threshold for that might be higher than you would like. So I did think about that as well.
The only other thing, Greg, I would say is I wonder if, and I please don't, the name I'm going to throw out, I'm not at all comparing him to him, but I wonder if it's sort of that Roman effect of we already are preparing ourselves for you guys shoving this guy down our throat because of who he is and what he's done and what his comparisons to Kurt Angle are. And maybe they're already trying to brace themselves for the, we're going to stuff them down your face as a baby face, whether you want it or not. And the NXT crowd tends to react more violently anti that maybe than the main roster crowd does right away.
Yeah, that could be as well. The next match was Dominic Mysterio retaining the North American Championship over Mustafa Ali and Wes Lee. He pinned Lee with a frog splash. Rhea Ripley was at ringside with Dom Dom, and she got involved plenty. The camera always seemed to find her, and I can completely understand because she was easily the biggest star involved in this match. So I thought that, you know, I know that WWE's theory now is send main roster guys down and women down to NXT to help the ratings. You know, negotiations are coming up for a new contract. You want those ratings to look good at that time. So that was probably the impetus for Dominic winning here. I thought he could have lost here because it's triple threat and you could have had, you know, Ali pin Lee or vice versa and have Dominic lose without losing the title. And I thought it could have been a short-term thing to kind of pop a rating or whatever the case may be. But he does retain. He'll still be on NXT. And I think that is the right move because it gives him a title to prance around with on main roster TV. And, you know, it's not a main roster title, but it's an NXT title, and yet he still can come across as, you know, somewhere closer to the level of the heat that he gets than he had been. And so I think that's, you know, you want to put your most engaging characters in top positions, and I think being a champion, even if it's a North American champion, even if it's an NXT, does just that.
Yeah, this is a heat factory. This is if we're looking for renewable energy, find a way to sap it out of computer and TV screens anytime Dom is on television, because they have struck gold with the amount of legitimate hatred that the crowd has for him. And good for him that he's able to generate it. You know, and I think, too, it doesn't hurt to have Rhea completely try to legitimize all of his goods and completely minimize all of his bads, you know, as that perfect sort of sidekick, except I feel bad even calling her a sidekick because she is the show.
Yeah.
You know, the thing, and this is not the last time this comment will be made, Greg, and I'm sure I'm only adding it to thousands of others. When in the history of professional wrestling will the baby faces learn to bring a buddy with them to help neutralize an obvious bad guy? You know what I mean? Like,
never.
Again, I know I'm trying to
never.
Put reality
They're
into
never
a situation
going to learn.
Where that... No, amen. But it's like, you know, you already are sort of doing the... You're inviting it by having it be a no DQ, right? Like, it's, well, of course she's going to get involved because there's no ill ramifications from it. But boy, right. You'd think one of these days these guys would be like, you know, maybe we should bring one of our buddies just in case, but of course not. But like, you know, there it is again. And still, I've always wondered why the triple threat matches are no DQ. You know, I get that two people can team up on one person, but I've never really gotten why they are no DQ in that way, because it just doesn't seem like it needs it. But it is what it is, and Dom retains. And I think as much as we would all agree, or many of us would agree, he's not a legitimate champion in terms of doing it on his own. I mean, he's gold right now, and people love to boo him. And the fact that he can walk around as a smarmy, doesn't matter where the belt is from. He could have gone to the thrift store and built him one, and he's still going to parade it as if he's Roman Reigns and he's got the Universal title. So,
for sure. I mean, that's part of the charm. I mean, it's the same thing as as Vic Joseph said, 2 hours tops in prison that he's been milking forever, you know, acting like the North American Championship is the greatest thing since sliced bread probably goes right along with that. That delusion, I think, is what makes Dominic Mysterio so fun and such an interesting character. The fifth match and the semi-main event was Tiffany Stratton defeating Thea Hale in a submission match when Andre Chase threw in the towel. So Stratton had Hale in a Boston Crab, and the towel was thrown in. You know, this is a match. Two really young women. I think they said Stratton is 24, Hale is 19. And the improvement that both women have made since they started on TV has been amazing. I mean, Stratton was doing stuff in this match, smoothly going for counters and things like that. And not your normal counters. I mean, things that are not easy to do. And I just remember when she first started on TV, it was like, yeah, she's got the look, but she's got a ways to go. And she's caught up in such a short amount of time, it's been really impressive to see. And Thea Hale, I think, as a character, has always been fun, has always been unique, and it's a character that I think can work on the main roster whenever that day comes. But you just wanted to see it in the ring. You wanted to see, did she have that minimum level in the ring to support that character? And I think she's far surpassed that minimum at this point. I mean, she, you know, we're not talking top level or anything, but certainly good enough to get by with that character. So this is just a really nice match between two up-and-coming women, which is what you hope to get out of NXT. I mean, I think this is really a microcosm of what WWE wants NXT to be. You can see these young wrestlers without a lot of experience, you know, taken from nothing and built within the WWE system, and see them put on pretty good matches and continue to rise up the ranks. So your thoughts on Stratton versus Hale here?
Yeah, I agree with you. I had a question for you to start, though, and I know we're a while away from this, but I know that they've done it in many instances since. But when the day comes that Thea does get brought up to one of the main roster shows, do you foresee them changing her name due to its close sound to Rhea? Like, I know that they've done that with a few of the men where they either had a similar sounding name or a rhyming name, and they made one the newer guy change just so they didn't have to deal with maybe the confusion. Am I making too much of that, or do you think that's a possibility down the line?
I hadn't thought of that. I guess it depends on how much input Vince really has. You know, he is notorious for that kind of thing, notorious for taking away first names. I mean, Vince is back in charge, and Austin Theory is still Austin Theory. He didn't go back to being Theory, so... you know, if it's a Triple H decision, she probably keeps the name. But if Vince really starts to get involved, perhaps even more so than he is now, then maybe you see the change.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, the match in general, like I said, I thought it was also pretty solid. I agree with you. I think Tiffany Stratton, certainly you can tell she's been putting work in off camera, which you would hope, not just as a champion, but as someone that wants to be the best at their craft should. And I think that growth is very evident. Outside of the match, two of the things that stuck out to me, and again, I know this is a WWE thing, and I don't know why I let it grind my gears because it's such a minuscule thing, but the fact that the Duke brought his brings his trophy out to the ring with him is the most not sensical. You know what I mean? It's just like, why are you bringing this? It doesn't make any sense to me. And the fact that they even gave him one as the MVP of Chase U still blows my mind too. But just the prop in general, I didn't get. And then there was a move in the middle of the match that all four of us in my living room went, ooh, when Thea did some sort of backdrop in the corner and it looked like she dropped Tiffany, maybe not on her head, but like, not flat on her back, like up on her neck where like it could have been an over rotation or something that Tiffany wasn't ready for. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that?
I probably did in the moment, but I don't recall specifically that incident right now.
Yeah. I made a note of it because it looked awkward enough. Now I saw the ref come right over and sort of check on Tiffany and she, you know, obviously they kept going. But it did look, it did sort of cause us all to be like, ooh.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm interested to see where the storyline goes from this, right? Thea didn't submit either. Andre Chase threw the towel in. That certainly upset Duke. I think that's going to lead to a men's feud more than it will do anything to this women's feud. But I think the thing, and again, I've never booked a wrestling show. I'm not a writer for a wrestling show. And so, certainly Monday morning quarterbacking is easy. But I feel like if you're going to do a towel, something where someone else stops the match on the person's behalf, to me, as long as Thea was in that Boston Crab or the two different spots of it with the little break in between, to me, she should have either passed out or grabbed the rope, right? Like she was close enough mm-hmm. where I think that could have happened too. So just from a realism piece, and to me, throwing the towel should be more of like more of an early throw-in gimmick, like, well, what were you doing? You jumped the gun. She wasn't done yet versus a, it just felt like she was sitting in it too long to be believable, where she either would have passed out or tapped out and not had to throw the towel in. But other than that, and I know that's such a nit to pick because, again, I thought the match was solid for what it was. I'm just excited and look forward to see kind of where the players in that story go from here.
So heading into the main event, I thought this was a so-so show. You know, there was some good, there was some not so good. It was kind of middling. And then the main event happened, and I thought that bumped it up to a slight thumbs up for me. And that was Carmelo Hayes over Ilya Dragunov to retain the NXT title. These men, and Dragunov is just, he's very unique in the way that, I mean, he's like a rag doll sometimes. He just throws his body around. The one moment where he came off the top and Carmelo Hayes hit him coming down with the code breaker, and then like the sell that Dragunov did was just fantastic. And I noted that on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, where you can follow me there. It was great, and Hayes did very well. I was a little surprised. I knew Hayes was short. I thought Dragunov was short too, and Dragunov had, you know, some height on Hayes in this one. But yeah, just an all-out balls-to-the-wall match, which you get with Dragunov. Like, I wonder how long he can do this. Like, I wonder how long he can just throw his entire body into every match that he has. Maybe it's good that he only wrestles. It's not like they're doing four house shows a week and then TV. So, I mean, that's a good thing for him to sort of preserve himself. Maybe it allows him to go 100 miles per hour in these matches sometimes. But just a fantastic main event. That's the kind of match you want to cap off your show.
Yeah, I agree. And I think when I assess matches, perhaps more on the silly side, but more on sort of trying to get a gauge of how the crowd's feeling, I listen for the chants. And this match got all three. It got an NXT chant, it got a This Is Awesome chant, and it got a Fight Forever chant. And so, you know, I'm not saying 5 stars, but a good, healthy 4, 4.5, because it was good enough to get all three chants at different parts in the match, and I think that's a sign of something the crowd is very into. You know, I too wonder how many ice bags poor Ilya has on his body right now as he's sitting in the locker room in Texas. But I think both of those guys, you know, I was so happy when Ilya showed up kind of after they weren't really sure what was happening with NXT UK and were they transitioning to NXT Europe and all that kind of stuff. So I was so happy when he showed up because he was one of the real bright spots of NXT UK before it went off the air. And I just think, like you said about Tiffany and Thea being sort of the rising stars that are being molded in the WWE way, and that's a good sign. These guys are very much, you could build around these two. If you were going to fantasy draft NXT guys, you know, or I'll use your XFL combine, right? We'll play off of that a little bit. If you were going to build teams, these are guys you would build around. Like, I've never seen either one of them since they've had limelights on them have bad matches. They're not sloppy. They're believable. They have good characters. It's almost like there wasn't a way they could have a bad match. Think the one thing I kept my eyes on, and I don't know if you saw this, and I'll be interested to see if any callers and or emailers saw this, but right towards the end, I was really expecting Trick to turn on Melo when they were both outside and he was showing the belt in his face. Like, I was like, oh, here it comes. Like, there was no reason for it, but it just, the camera was staying on it too long for it to be like, oh boy, I know better. Something's about to go down. And it didn't. But it felt like it could have. And so I don't know, because I did think going into this that Ilya might win because Melo might be going up. And so if they were going to look for a way to break off Trick and Melo, well, then you have one turn on the other, and then Melo goes up, Trick stays down and develops and that sort of thing. But he won, and I'm fine with that. I think he's still got a few more matches down in NXT to show his stuff off against. But, yeah, I didn't look away this whole match. It was definitely one that kept my attention the whole time.
Kevin, you've already discovered the secret of being invited back on Wrestling Night in America, and that is mentioning the XFL. So congratulations.
I'm a fan. I'm hearing from my people that he's not going to re-sign. But one of my former students at the University of Dubuque, Michael Joseph, played for the DC Defenders this year and was probably the defensive player of the year until he got hurt 2 weeks before the end. And so, no, I'm a big fan of the XFL, and I followed all your combine coverage.
Awesome.
And so it's just kind of cool to see another platform for guys to get a chance to play football. So.
Absolutely. Agreed wholeheartedly. This is Wrestling Night in America for July 30th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. I am joined by PWTorch.com contributor Kevin Catani, and we have just broken down the NXT Great American Bash show that just finished. If you want to join in on the conversation, the phone lines are open, 515-605-9345. And you can also email us. I know it's getting late. It's past 11 o'clock Eastern, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. We do have one email in the hopper about SummerSlam, which is what we're going to preview next. So we've touched on Great American Bash. We're going to run down the card here for SummerSlam. And I want to start with the SummerSlam Battle Royal. We got two wrestlers announced on Friday on SmackDown. That would be LA Knight and Sheamus. This doesn't have any stipulation attached to it, at least right now. It seems like a very easy bone to throw to the LA Knight fans to have him win this and just ensure, you know, this. I could see this being a pre-show match. I'm not sure where you fit it on the card proper, but we've only gotten two announced participants so far, you know, LA Knight's got to be one of the favorites, if only just to acknowledge whatever crazy thing is happening in the audience where fans just are in love with him right now. And I can't, like, and I think I'm going to write a column on this at some point. You know, with all the other wrestlers who have had this groundswell behind them, you know, Bryan Danielson, you understood that because he was just a fantastic wrestler. He was small. He couldn't cut a promo, allegedly. But, you know, fans saw the talent there, and they got behind him. So anytime fans have gotten behind a wrestler like this that maybe the company wasn't behind, you could always point to something and say, yeah, I understand because of this, this, or this. With LA Knight, like, I like him, but I'm just wondering why now have fans started to, I mean, this is, you know, he's been in Impact, he's been in the NWA, he's been in NXT, never gotten any kind of reaction like he's getting on the main roster. So I'm wondering, like, what this is all about right now. It's hard for me to figure.
as someone who's probably joining in on all of his chants, I can also divorce myself from that enough to say that I agree with you that where is this coming from, right? Like, it all just sort of came from out of nowhere. I remember him being the favorite to win Money in the Bank. Or at least there were many in the Twitterverse and in my friend groups that thought that he was primed for that. And I don't know, but it shouldn't matter. I guess at the end of the day, as someone who studies and sort of teaches marketing, lightning in a bottle, like organic lightning in a bottle, doesn't happen all the time. And I think Nate and I talked about this last week, and I know others have opined on this as well. But I know that Vince was always very anti, if you got that recognition on your own and I'm not the one that gave it to you, I'm going to find a way to squash it quick, fast, and in a hurry. Hunter certainly does not share that. I think at the end of the day, Hunter wants what's best for business. And if people are going to buy tickets to see LA Knight, whether it's a 3-minute talking promo or a match, let's find a way to capitalize. But the thing that Nate and I were a little worried about as this sort of tidal wave of support has gone on is you have to pay it off now, right? Like, if you continue to have him lose, at what point does the crowd say, well, here's another case of us. It doesn't matter how much we cheer and support this guy. He's not going to get that respect, and so maybe we need to just shift our focus. And so it's either you've got to ride the wave. I mean, I think I saw on Twitter 2 days ago, the top five selling shirts, number one is Cody Rhodes, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are all LA Knight. And so he's doing something right. And so at some point you have to give him some kind of win to keep that going, or the crowd is going to move on because they're going to know, well, here's another case of them not listening to us because of whatever. And so that's my fear, is because certainly he's not Twilight, but he certainly is on the backside of Prime. And so, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot left. And so if you want to, I'm not saying to put a belt on him, but if you want to ride his wave and sort of get something out of this merch explosion and sort of the popularity that he's garnering, you've got to give fans a reason to keep going, and throwing up L's is not the way to do it. So I would definitely be okay if he were to win this Battle Royal pre-show or not. And I think that would be, you know, one of those ways to sort of show everybody, we hear you, we don't have a plan yet to fit him into, but here's a win, here's something he can talk about. So
yeah, absolutely. Not much else to say without a lot of other participants being announced. I'm sure we'll get that this Friday on SmackDown. Moving on.
Can I make a guarantee, Greg?
Absolutely. Sorry. Absolutely.
I'll make a guarantee for that match. Sheamus will get his 10 rings of the bell on somebody in that match, guaranteed.
Okay. I think that's that is
you heard it here first. Hot take. You heard it here first.
Going out on a limb there. I love it. We have Ronda Rousey versus Shayna Baszler. And kind of disappointing that it's so far down the card that we're talking about it so early. But I think that was sort of the nature not only of the turn when it happened, it came out of nowhere, but also the follow-up, which has been bouncing back and forth between heel and babyface for both. And it's been hard to get a read on who we're supposed to cheer for, who is the likable one in this. I'm trending towards Shayna Baszler, but it hasn't always been super clear. And I don't know if that's a product of them having to go into the feud sooner than they had wanted to because of Ronda Rousey's contract situation, and it sounds like she's going to be done after SummerSlam, or what the deal is. So given that, I would expect Shayna Baszler to go over. It could be a really big catapult-type win for Baszler, if Rousey is indeed going to be either taking time off or being gone permanently, and Baszler's not going to have Rousey to pal around with. So she's going to need to make a name for herself and stand on her own. And I think a big win here against Rousey would help her do that, because I do think she still has a lot of potential as, if nothing else, maybe a challenger at a pay-per-view, challenger of the month, for a main title on Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah, I'm with you. And last week, Nate and I think Sean, were lamenting that we really shouldn't be in this situation at all in terms of questioning Shayna's got-it-ness or not, because she was gift-wrapped out of NXT. There is no reason that she should not be a champion right now and a legitimate champion right now. And unfortunately for her, she came out where Vince was still calling a lot of the shots and just completely neutered her. And so what I have liked, and I know Nate and I have sort of talked off mic about as well, is how they've slowly been rebuilding Shayna into just the dominant pick up wins, get out of there. I'm not a friend. I'm not your buddy. Like, I just am here to win and move. And I'm hopeful that, like you said, this can be that next step in the puzzle, because she came out of NXT gift wrapped. And I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure you have listened to the NXT podcast from time to time, but how many times Kelly and Tom and I and Nate and others were like, no, this is the pay-per-view that Shayna's going to lose, and she never lost. And we learned you don't bet against her. And now, unfortunately, she's a bad punchline to a bad joke, and she shouldn't be. So I'm hopeful, whether or not they wanted to go to this feud so soon, she does pick up the W. This is a catapult for her, and we can sort of rehabilitate her back to that I left NXT as champ. I gave the belt back. You know what I mean? Like, get her back to that spot because she was there.
Next up, we have Ricochet versus Logan Paul. And one of the things I think that surprised me, and maybe that surprised a lot of other people watching the build-up to this, is just how much mic time Ricochet has gotten on TV. It seems like WWE has been allergic to giving him that kind of time in the past. And so, you know, he's without Logan Paul being there every week, he's needed to carry the load a little more than he otherwise would against a normal opponent. I think the match is going to be spectacular. I think they're going to try to pull out at least one move that's going to go viral, similar to what they did at Money in the Bank, although sort of unfortunately, and then, you know, dating back to, I believe it was the Royal Rumble where they had the run in as well. So I guess going back to Ricochet, though, Kevin, I want your take on what you thought of Ricochet's mic work. Given the amount of time he's had, which I think in recent weeks is probably, if you add it all up, more mic time than he's ever gotten in WWE TV up to this point in his career. So I wanted your take, especially knowing that this was seen as a weakness of his, which is why he hasn't gotten that time, how you think he's done in that regard.
Well, if I know anything about the brass of WWE, I know they don't put a mic in somebody's hand if they don't think that they can talk. Now, no one will say that Ricochet is a top five promo in the history of WWE, but I also know when he was in NXT, he was given he talked a lot in NXT because he was a champion and one of the superstars of the black and gold era, and also as a small asterisk side note, another guy that got neutered when he got to the main roster, which makes me sad. But no, I don't think that they give mic time to people they don't think are able to do it. And I think the fact that he's been able to do it for the last couple of weeks, to tell the story, to build the emotion into this feud with Logan Paul and sort of that, you know, wrestler versus internet star and who's more legitimate. I think they're doing a good job telling the story overall. I think Ricochet has done very well. I personally popped, and I think it was this past week on SmackDown, and I don't know if you how much NXT you watch or have watched, but the first time that the Velveteen Dream and Ricochet squared off, Ricochet did the jump from the ring to the floor, land, stick the landing, like for everybody to go, oh, that sort of thing. And so he broke it out on Paul, and I was like, that made me giddy because I'm glad they sort of let him go back to that, knowing that the callback to that would be to somebody that they are largely acknowledging was never in the company to begin with.
Yes.
And so I like to see that, and of course he's just a freak athlete as it is. So I think that they are going to try to – that's going to be the match that they're going to look at each other before they come out of that curtain and say, let's steal this show because we can. Now, of course, what I don't want is, you know, a high spot for the sake of high spot fest. So if there is a balance, that's what I'm hoping for. But certainly you cannot argue that either of these guys are very, very athletic and nimble and flexible, and they're going to do whatever they can to make the crowd ooh and ah with phones out and video recording and all that. So.
And if there was to be a match that was high spot for the sake of high spot, this would probably be the best one. So
there is that silver lining
as well.
if grace was to be given, it's going to be for that one.
Yes, for sure. The Intercontinental title is on the line when Gunther defends against Drew McIntyre. And this is one that I think a lot of people are looking forward to. Gunther has been a hot streak, staying Intercontinental Champion for such a long time, which is good and bad because part of the bad is that the opponents that he wrestles, whether on TV or pay-per-view, you don't really get the sense that they can win. With Drew McIntyre, I think it's a little different. I think there are people out there who could say, you know, if Gunther's streak was to end, I could see it being to someone the caliber of Drew McIntyre. So I think that's going to add a lot of drama to the near falls and things like that. And just the hard-hittingness. And I think, you know, something WWE has done really well, and we see it with these two matches that we've talked about. Ricochet and Logan Paul is going to be the athletic standout, the high spots, all of this stuff. Drew McIntyre and Gunther is going to be the hard-hitting, you know, pound each other in the chest type match. And WWE has gotten really good at putting a little of everything at a very high level on each show like this. So really looking forward to Gunther and Drew McIntyre. What are your thoughts on that and really the potential of Drew McIntyre to actually take the belt here?
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to the Twitter pictures of each of their chests after the match because I think we're going to see all sorts of bruising and all that.
For sure.
You know, I don't know, Greg, because as much as I try not to get myself caught up in all of the contract talk, I still haven't seen anywhere that Drew has re-signed past October. And I know that he even sort of made a comment in one of his promos that said something like, well, I know everybody's worried about my future, but I'm worried about the now, and right now that's Gunther. And I appreciate him sort of saying, hey, I'm here to work. Like, say what you want. I know I was away, but, like, I'm here to work. Well, I don't know if you're going to put the belt on someone who's gone in 2 months. Or maybe you do and sort of get what you can out of him, unlike sort of Dean Ambrose, where they knew he was leaving, but they just sort of crapped on him, I guess. I don't know. But I think he can, and I think that he would make a fabulous Intercontinental Champion. I also think the other thing playing into this is, do they want Gunther to beat Honky Tonk Man's streak? Because I've met the Honky Tonk Man at several WrestleCons and things like that, and he still milks every penny out of the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion ever. And so sort of like the Cubs up here in the Midwest, once you're not the lovable loser anymore, you can't call yourself that anymore. And so I don't know, do they want Gunther to break the streak? And if so, well, then no, Drew's not going to win. But if they like sort of the heritage of the Honky Tonk Man continuing to sort of hold on to that moniker, then he's got to lose it soon because I think he's within 35 or 40 days of breaking that streak. So I think it kind of depends on which way the management's leaning that way. But I'm a Drew fan, and I would be all for him winning. But either way, yeah, you can be guaranteed that these two guys are literally going to try to beat each other up, beat the ring up, beat the crowd. You know what I mean? Like, this is going to be just a hard, hard, hard-hitting match.
Yeah, if I was fans in the front row, I'd be careful. There might be some residual, you know, you might look down your shirt and see your chest is even a little bruised after the match.
Yes,
somehow.
The percussion,
you know,
of it all.
Yes, yes. As far as the Drew McIntyre contract thing, I'm glad you brought that up because when he came back, people just kind of assumed, oh, you know, he must have re-signed. And we kind of waited for that confirmation and waited for that confirmation. And you're right. I don't ever remember it coming. So is this a situation where WWE is just bringing him back to put over Gunther on his way out? Or did he really resign and they've just really kept it quiet? Or what's the deal? So that's – and I think the mystery is a little – I think it makes it a little more interesting, not knowing.
Right.
Moving on to the right now, the other women's match on the show, Asuka versus Charlotte Flair versus Bianca Belair, WWE Women's Championship match, triple threat. Hard to see Asuka walking out of this with the title because Charlotte's in it, and Charlotte usually wins titles when she's in those kinds of matches. Even Bianca Belair, you could make the argument, although I'm not sure she's gone long enough without the title to kind of do the needed reset that I think a lot of people, when she lost the title, kind of felt like was due because she had stagnated so much as champion. And who knows, you know, maybe Flair and Belair cancel themselves out and Asuka somehow gets the victory. But usually in title matches, Kevin, it's the champions to lose, right? They have the champion's advantage. So you always kind of err on the side of the champion retaining. Whereas this one, I'm kind of like, I really see a difficult path for Asuka to retain here.
Yeah, I think of the triple threats of late, this is certainly one where the odds seem stacked against Asuka. I know we talked I can't remember if it was Nate and I or the last time I was on the NXT show, but sort of that idea that Bianca is able to show more of her personality when she's the hunter versus the hunted. And so I wonder if that sort of cancels her out from winning because she just, you know, she basically just lost the title and she's really sort of been rebuilding the hunter mentality. And I think people have been responding to that. To be perfectly frank, and I'm sure I'm going to upset some people somewhere along the line, I am and have been over Charlotte for a while. Other than the record that they might want her to break versus John Cena or somebody else and keep it in the family, I've never really bought her character. Does she have the highest chance of winning? Yes, because they love her and they want her to have the accolades and the resume to always sort of back that up. But I think Asuka, to me, I have loved her work for the most part since she's been in the WWE and all phases of NXT and WWE. And yeah, the odds and the chips are all against her, but I do think, similar to tonight, without the outside interference, but with some sort of A taking out B and Asuka picking up the trash sort of thing, you know, certainly there's going to be at least one missed spot. There could be two. I could also see it where Bianca, you know, kind of revives the feud against Charlotte that she had initially where they spend too much time on each other and Asuka sort of, again, picks up the pieces. So I think if Asuka wins, it's not going to be sort of the gallant upfront clean win. It will definitely be a picking up the scraps win. And like you said, I think it's hard to bet against Charlotte as much as I like to because I'm just sort of over her. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I do think that Bianca will not win because, again, I think they still like her as the hunter. And so at that point, then it would either be Asuka or Charlotte. Depends on who gets the mist in the face. I don't know.
And we also have Io Shirai and her Money in the Bank briefcase looming over this match as well. Do you see her getting involved, you know, maybe distracting Asuka and allowing someone else to win, or being involved in the finish some way that gives someone else, or even cashing in the briefcase in this one?
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, yeah, and like you said, I could see Asuka winning only to then lose it on the Money in the Bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true too. The next match that we'll talk about is Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar, one-on-one. No stipulations attached yet, but we still have an episode of Monday Night Raw to go before SummerSlam on Saturday. So who knows? I am surprised, as much as I thought he would fit in well in WWE, I am surprised at how well Cody Rhodes has sort of seamlessly, without changing a lot of who he is from AEW, he's fit in so well in WWE. And to be honest, his promos are must listen for me. I mean, they are fantastic. I love them. He has a way of pandering to the crowd without doing it the same way that a lot of others do, where it's kind of syrupy and obvious. He's just, you can tell that a lot of thought goes into his promos and what he does, like when he says, you know, I'm going to turn my back on the camera for a second because I want to look at this side of the. I mean, that's something that's very simple but unique to him, and I just love his work on the promos. The match with Lesnar, I'm really looking forward to as well. I'm not sure they ever really fully fleshed out Lesnar's turn on Cody. And I think we've all forgotten that was right after we assumed Cody was going to beat Roman Reigns, and there was a lot of ill feelings about that, and WWE kind of jangled their keys over here and said, look, we've got Brock Lesnar attacking him. Like, so I'm not sure if you go back that far whether or not that was adequately explained, but, I mean, it's two major alpha stars, Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar, going toe-to-toe at SummerSlam, and hard to complain about that.
Listen, this is the stuff that dreams are made of, if you will. But I personally am a big Cody guy, and that's not to say I'm not a Brock fan, but I've supported him since long before Stardust, and then through the awful Stardust days. As a Tampa Bay Bucks fan, Greg, I can tell you, you learn to support through really awful and lean times, and then you get to celebrate when there are good times.
Hey, I'm a Jaguars fan, so I understand the lean times.
Well, listen, and my best friend is a Jaguars fan, and I, for years, we used to have a bet with each other of, we bet on our team to be the worst team. So, like, I would say the Bucks would only win one game, and he'd say the Jaguar. And then whoever had the better record, that guy had to buy the loser lunch, essentially.
So at least you get something out of your favorite team being terrible.
There you go. There you go. yeah, I am the same way. You know, we make sure that Monday nights the TV's on at 6:58, because if Seth isn't kicking off the show, Cody is. And like I told you, my girls are the biggest Cody fans. My mom actually just bought them both Cody Rhodes shirts, and they were so happy to put them on. but I think the Cody Rhodes gimmick that we're seeing now, when he sort of went into all the red, white, and blue and gold in AEW, to me that was a WWE gimmick in AEW. Like, it's just sort of tailor-made for how it gets presented sort of in the WWE system. And I think what I like about it is he's brought the edge and the self-assurance that he developed on the indies and in AEW and mixed it with the relatability of the son of a plumber, right? Like, he doesn't say it overtly, but like you said, when he turns his back to the hard cam to look at the crowd that most wrestlers have to pretend don't exist because they have to look in the camera, you know, that's telling these people, hey, I care about you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for buying a ticket. Like, you mean something to me. And so how do you not love that, knowing that he seems human in a system that is building superhumans? And so I have a lot of respect for that. I think certainly, you know, those first, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks, and I remember Wade talking about it a lot with, you know, his own podcast, and then when he would talk with Todd Martin or even any of the flagship stuff, where it was like, oh, I'm expecting bigger reactions and we're not getting him. His entrance gets the biggest pop every Monday night, no questions asked. And I think that he has certainly built himself to a point where they know when they're ready to pull the trigger, he's going to be able to keep the reins as long as they want him to keep the reins. No pun intended. and so, yeah, I think this is going to be a really good match. Certainly it's going to be, you know, I think, you know, Cody is still halfway nursing the metal rod in his arm plus the shoulder that has been Kimura'd to death. And so it'll be that versus, you know, him being able to get the better on Brock. I do think that Cody is going to win, and sort of let him use this as a catapult to sort of the next thing. I could see Brock taking some time off. This is usually about that time where he goes and rests before Royal Rumble time and WrestleMania time and all that. But I do think that Cody will
probably win.
There you go. I like that. Back up to Canada in his hunting lodge and
yep.
Look for moose or whatever. So, yeah, I think that Cody will win. I think it'll be a really good match. My hope is it's somewhere between too long and too short, right? Because I think Brock is known for sort of having, against lesser opponents, you know, Brock was the master of the 4.5 to 6 minute match. He certainly has proven that he can go longer, but this doesn't need to be a 25 or 30 minute match. It probably needs to be a 12 to 16 minute thing, have Cody go over, let him celebrate, call it a day.
Yeah, I like that idea. The World Heavyweight Championship is on the line, Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor. I actually saw this match yesterday at a house show I went to in Fort Myers, so it'll be interesting to watch it on Saturday and see if there's anything familiar in the match. But you know, Rollins and is so over with his music and everything like that. I think Finn Balor is in a better position now than he had been previously. I think all of Judgment Day has been elevated within the last few months. So that's been fun to see. So, I don't know. I just a good match here. I think that they've really done a nice job of, you know, in the interview segments and stuff like that, of ratcheting up the intensity for this one. And I think that's what I'm looking for. How intense is this match? They could go out and put on a good match in their sleep, but that intensity is what takes it to another level. And I think they've been really working hard to establish that on TV over the last few weeks.
Yeah. Well, and I guess my half joking, but half not question, do we see a purple demon out of Finn Balor for this match? if he was going to break it out, this would be a match to do it, no?
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure. I kind of feel like the demon's gone into the mothballs for a while, and I'm not sure we see him
again for
quite a while. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying I need to see it, but if there was good, if you're talking about intensity, anytime he's had those grudge match, blood feudy matches, that's when the demon shows up.
Sure.
And then, of course, I just wonder, does the demon make sense in this sort of Grand Theft Auto, Saints Row sort of attitude they're playing as Judgment Day? I don't know. No, I am very much looking forward to this match. And I was actually talking to my buddy about it the other day. And I actually would love to see Finn win. I think regardless of the fact that he's the heel in this match, he has the more not believable is not the right word, but like to me, he has the more legitimate story. Like I have been buying his quest, right? Like he was the first Universal champ and never got to enjoy it. He pretty much got sent to the back burner right after. Seth has been in the spotlight either as a Shield member or as his own self pretty much from that point forward. And despite him being the heel, you almost empathize with his, hey, I never got my moment. I'm still in the best shape of my life, and I'm ready to have that moment. And so, you know, I think that the ratings machine and the merch machine would say that the smart money is on Seth because of, you know, the way the crowd reacts to him and sort of, you know, all that. I think if you want to sort of pull oh, now I'm blanking on their name. The Adam Cole NXT faction. Why am I feel like an idiot for blanking on their name?
Undisputed Era.
Yes. If you want to pull the Undisputed Era, everybody in Judgment Day having a title, this will be another step in that way. Of course, then that adds the intrigue of Senor Money in the Bank and his briefcase and what does he decide to do with it? Because the only other belt to challenge for would be Roman Reigns, and that's not really on the docket
right now for him. This is at a time, too, where Priest is sort of elbowing his way into a leadership role with the Judgment Day. And
sure.
How does Finn Balor winning the world title change those dynamics then?
Right, right. And I also would think that, I don't want to say maybe smart money, but I wouldn't be surprised if EO... I think that one of the two Money in the Bank briefcases will be cashed in at SummerSlam. If EO doesn't, I think it could be very safe to see Damian do it, whether it's on Seth or Finn. It doesn't matter. But I think that because we expect these two guys to beat the living tar out of each other for probably 20 to 25 minutes, you know, what better situation would Damian be in than to pick the rotting flesh as a vulture, you know, after these guys beat each other up. So I do think that that's something to keep an eye on. But I would like to see Finn win because I am a Finn fan. But of course, I don't think you go wrong either way because I do think that they are going to give us a very good match that people will talk about beyond SummerSlam.
I'm glad you mentioned Damian Priest potentially cashing in on Roman Reigns because that is part of our email question that we have tonight from our friend John. And this is actually going to lead into Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso in the Tribal Combat match for the Undisputed WWE Universal title first, and then the last part of his question is about Damian Priest. So John says, hi, Greg and co-host. Hope you're both doing well. With SummerSlam being right around the corner and only the final touches being applied to the buildup for all the matches, I thought I would go over the most likely scenarios for the finish to the Roman Jey Tribal Combat match for the WWE Undisputed Universal Championship. For the record, I think Reigns will 100% retain, even though I would prefer Jey to win if the focus had been on the championships. Because this feud up until this point has been focused more on who should be tribal chief, the championship seems secondary, and I don't think Reigns should lose the titles unless they're talked about more and shown to be his most prized possessions that would absolutely destroy him if he loses them. On SmackDown this past Friday, Reigns saying he'll still be Roman Reigns even if he loses the titles all but confirmed there's no way they're changing hands. It's plausible he was bluffing so he could unsettle Jey and take the pressure off of himself, but I think the more likely reason was to simmer fans' hopes when Jey comes up short. It's the kind of thing that WWE has historically done before a huge title match when a hot babyface isn't scheduled to win the title. I think it's more likely Reigns loses the title at WrestleMania to Jey or to Cody. But this match is still intriguing, even though I think there's a 0% chance Roman loses the titles. It has been one of the most compelling feuds in WWE. Anyway, here are all the most likely scenarios for finishes to this match as I could think of, with the most likely first and then going in order. Number one, Roman retains after Jimmy interferes and inadvertently costs Jey the match by superkicking him, and Roman and Solo take him out. I believe this is definitely the most likely scenario because Jimmy has been taken out of action by Roman and Solo, and Roman is using that to his advantage and blaming Jey for it, knowing full well it's not really Jey's fault Jimmy was taken out. He's also said the main event Jey Uso only became that because of Jimmy being injured at the time, furthering tension between the two twins that was brought to our attention before Jey chose Jimmy weeks ago and super-kicked Roman. There were clearly unresolved issues between Jimmy and Jey weeks ago that weren't addressed for a few weeks, and this revolves around some growing resentment from Jimmy. Conversely, Jey has said he wants to win for what Roman did to Jimmy. Either way, Jimmy is very important to the story they're telling right now. I think Jimmy will have noble intentions, but his emotions and need for revenge will cost Jey. Number two, Roman wins straight up. On last week's SmackDown, when his tribal combat match was announced, there seemed to be a suggestion of a respect for rules and tradition from Roman. He stopped the hothead Solo from attacking Jey, and his reaction changed when Jey proposed the match. This suggests that if he wins this match dishonorably, questions may be asked by the tribal elders like Rikishi, and maybe Roman's status as tribal chief gets revoked. That's why I think if Jimmy doesn't interfere, a very rare, relatively clean finish, maybe Solo interferes, unbeknownst to Roman, who is out, in a Roman title match may actually be plausible. Number three, the match ends in a no contest. How such a match with no DQ rules ends in a no contest, you just need to look at some Hell in a Cell match finishes in the last 10 years to see it is possible. You can never rule this one out, especially since there have been pay-per-views from other companies recently charging way more to purchase that have had non-finishes or preposterous finishes. For the price of a Peacock subscription, a finish like this may be rationalized by WWE if they believe it's furthering a storyline. Number four, Jey somehow wins, but only after a very overbooked finish. WWE pay-per-views and PLE since the Attitude Era have notoriously had main events with small or major interference. It's also a major aspect of Roman's title reign, how he can never win on his own. So I imagine if Jey wins, it's due to at least some interference, likely from Jimmy, but maybe others get involved, maybe Brock Lesnar, bitter after losing to Cody, maybe The Rock or Cody himself, a new faction debuting like The Shield back in the day and taking Roman out of commission for a few months. This is fairly unlikely unless Roman was planning to take some time off after SummerSlam, which could be the case for all we know. Either way, I think there's a 0% chance that whenever Reigns loses the title that he loses it clean, he will have some excuse. Number five, Jimmy betrays Jey and joins the Bloodline. This is least likely of the conventional scenarios to me because he left the Bloodline because he realized what Sammy and others were saying about Roman being manipulative was true. It would seem odd if he just suddenly changed his mind, but not impossible if he's the kind of person who is susceptible to Roman's assertions recently that Jey's success recently has come at the expense of Jimmy's. This could lead to Jimmy being more resentful of his twin and Roman's manipulation working, at least temporarily, to retain his title and remain tribal chief. Number six, Solo inadvertently costs Roman by being a hothead. It has been an underlying feature of Solo's character recently, how his inexperience and violent tendencies sometimes make Roman's life a little more difficult. That may be something Solo is trying to correct by choosing the tribal chief Roman Reigns to follow as opposed to his brothers, the Usos. Maybe Solo's inexperience and Jimmy's interference distracts and costs Roman the titles. Finally, number seven, Damian Priest cashes in during the match out of nowhere to make it a triple threat, and he either wins and Judgment Day holds all the gold with Finn also pinning Seth, or Roman pins him, not Jay, thereby giving Jay a reason to ask for a rematch, but it's delayed to build anticipation. There's been so much focus recently on Damian Priest cashing in on whoever the world champion is, including possibly on his friend Finn Balor. But remember, WWE has never clearly stated that the Money in the Bank winners have to cash in only on their own show's champions. They even said in the build-up to Money in the Bank that the winners can cash in on the other brand's champions if they wish. What a perfect time for WWE to do something completely unexpected than having Priest cash in on Roman or Jay and not Seth or Finn, and Finn pinning Seth earlier in the night and Judgment Day and SummerSlam with essentially all the main titles and pretty much running WWE as the most dominant faction ever, as Michael Cole just cannot believe the huge bombshell that has happened as SummerSlam goes off the air with fireworks. Of course, the one flaw in this is that Priest would presumably have to be on SmackDown and the others on Raw, but I'm sure there are ways around that. Question, what do you think of the scenarios I suggested? So, Kevin, I'm going to pitch to you. I do think Jay winning is unlikely, but not for any of the reasons that John laid out there. I think he already has a visual pinfall, or not a visual pinfall, but a legit pinfall on Roman Reigns. I think to pin Roman Reigns twice in such a short period of time would be very surprising to me if they booked it that way. So I will go with Roman Reigns winning just because we've already seen Jay pin him. So Roman gets his revenge here. But what did you think about the scenarios John laid out? The most likely, do you think, maybe the most intriguing to you, one that you hadn't thought about for this Roman Reigns versus Jay Uso match?
Yeah, John gave us some very thorough scenarios, so I appreciate the legwork
he always
did
does.
On that. The fan in me wants to see Jay win, much to the earlier scenario I described about Shayna. It seems silly to bet against Roman. One of the things that's the one player that John did not mention is Paul Heyman, and please know that in my mind still is Paul's questionable allegiance to Brock Lesnar. Mm-hmm. And even in the middle of the bloodline, when Roman and Brock were feuding, Paul even sort of had wavering allegiances based on kind of who was on top at the time. And so I know that he wouldn't get physical with anyone. At least offensively, he could very well end up taking a bump. But I think it's going to be I remember from SmackDown them putting a really big emphasis on the honor and the integrity of what a tribal rules match means. And the fact that Roman and Jay sort of shook hands and touched foreheads in a very sort of Polynesian island respect way, and almost as if like they were in a way where like that's how I think that they would greet each other off camera. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be one of those where Solo and Jimmy are going to try to get involved, and I think that each allied person is going to talk them off of or get in the way of them because of how much the honor of this situation means. I also would not be surprised if Rikishi or any of the elders who have been sort of on screen show up at some point, whether it's on stage at the beginning of it, periodically throughout. Maybe they're sitting in the front row and sort of get camera time. But I think they're really trying to build up the, like you said at the beginning, this is for the belt, but the belt means far less than the tribal chief. And so I could see elders maybe getting involved. I could see there being ringside presences that are thwarted in some way, right? So Jimmy tries to hit Roman. Jay stops him and says, hey, man, that's not how this works. Solo tries to get involved. Roman stops him. Or either one of them try to get involved and Rikishi, you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be some sort of the honor of this match means more than anything else. And I did like John's scenario of the interference happening. So Solo interfering with and trying to hit Jay while Roman is knocked out. So Roman doesn't actually know interference happened. And so he thinks the honor of the match is preserved. But lo and behold, there was interference. That's why Jay is knocked out and that sort of thing. I also think I read somewhere, and again, this is what I get for poking around on social media aimlessly, because I wasn't hunting for this, but I thought I saw someone say that Roman may have recently signed a movie contract, something where he's going to have to be away to film for an extended period. And so I also could put stock in him losing.
Well, with the strike going on, nobody is filming anything right now. So
well, exactly, and that was the other piece. And I know that I saw that message before the strike happened. And so maybe what was going to be a Roman loss now will maintain a Roman win because, well, where are you going to go? Nobody's working. But I do remember seeing something about that. I think my least likely is the completely clean win, like without any interference. There is going to be presence around the ring in some way. And I personally would love to see some elders at least be there, not necessarily get involved because a couple of them are probably too old to take a bump safely. But I think Rikishi could certainly at least take one. And I would love to see him there as sort of maybe a secondary support piece to Jimmy and Jay. I don't know. But yeah, as much as I think Jay can and should be the one to end the reign, I think SummerSlam is low enough on the totem pole of the big four that they might want to save that for something down the road.
And the last piece of John's email, he says, you can then resume the Roman J feud over the right to be tribal chief without the titles, which has been the main focus anyway. As Roman said, he's still going to be Roman Reigns even if he wasn't champion, so maybe he does lose them. But to Damian Priest, who most fans will think will cash in on the World Heavyweight Champion on Raw. Question, do you think it's even in the realm of possibility that this whole Priest-Balor tension is just a red herring and Priest actually cashes in on Roman or Jay and Judgment Day has all the gold and is the dominant faction in WWE? Keep up the great work. Thank you. The same to you, John, who brings us, as Kevin said, very thorough email questions. Love to do these deep dives with him in these every few weeks. So I know you kind of hand-waved away the idea of Priest cashing in on Roman. Did John's email and his argument for it sway you at all?
Listen, and also thank you, John, for the email. As my first time answering one of the emails, I really do appreciate that level of depth. It did, in as much to say, everybody loves a little chaos. So why not shake it up and let it all be a swerve to him cashing in on the main event, not the co-main event. But I do think they will, and I do think it is worth having Judgment Day each hold a belt, purely for the optics, purely for the fact then that elevates them even more. Now, of course, how soon does all of that happen? I don't know. I remember when Undisputed Era was sort of chasing it down. Roddy winning the North American belt was the one that sort of took the longest. But I think, yeah, if you want to shake some stuff up going into Survivor Series, because, again, you think about Judgment Day being a very clear choice to being, if they're going to do at least one of those sort of traditional style Survivor Series matches, there's at least three. And if you want to do it intergender, you've got some options on the other side. But I would, you know, let's do it. Why not? Let's have every Judgment Day member holding a belt and see what they can do with that, even as a way of sort of bringing us into Mania season. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, a lot of intrigue around SummerSlam, and I hope that everyone listening will join us after SummerSlam on Saturday for our post-SummerSlam daily cast here as we, here at Wrestling Night in America, take your phone calls and emails and your reaction to SummerSlam. I always love doing those podcasts right after and get people's immediate reaction. It's so fun. So I want to hear from you next week at WNIALivecast@gmail.com or 515-605-9345. Kevin Catani, thank you so much for joining me here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. We'll be sure to have you back again soon. Before I let you go, plug your work for the Torch and where fans can find you on social media.
Sure. Well, you can find me on Twitter at KP Catani. And my most often contributions come with the NXT product as I fill in for both on the writing and the speaking side with PWT Talks NXT. But certainly I can and feel ready to talk any of the products. So if anybody wants to engage that way, by all means. And Greg, thanks so much just for even asking to be on. It's such a pleasure to finally talk with you and be with you on this show. And I do hope to do it again in the future.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Kevin. It's been a pleasure. All right, so one more plug to get out of the way before we go, and that is my new audio show called Greg Parks Out Loud. So if you have not listened to it, there is one that has been posted, I know for sure. I did send three in to Wade. I think only one's posted right now. I'm not sure the status of the others, but for those who listen to this show, you know that I write a full-page column in the Torch newsletter each and every week. I realize that people don't always read the newsletter. A lot of people subscribe to the VIP section of the Torch for audio only, so you may be missing out on my column each and every week. So what I've done is each week that I put out a column, I will also put out a podcast that will – I will read the column, and I will also expand on my thoughts. So if you are someone who reads the newsletter and reads my column each and every week, you'll still want to listen to the podcast because I go a little more in-depth than 1,500 words can do me each and every week. And, of course, if you don't read the newsletter and you just subscribe for the podcast, you're going to want to listen to get my thoughts and ideas about what I write about each and every week. So that's called Greg Parks Out Loud, the newest VIP audio show on pwtorch.com. I hope you'll check it out. You can leave feedback for me at Greg M. Parks on Twitter. Hope you'll follow me there. Otherwise, we'll talk to you again next weekend after SummerSlam. Don't forget, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.